Dateline, Washington, Thursday, December 11th, 2008. Hello again from the nation's capital. I'm Greg Corumbus. In this edition, why he voted against the bailout, Texas Republican Congressman Mike Conaway joins us to explain the factors that prompted him to vote no on $14 billion in emergency assistance to General Motors and Chrysler. We'll also find out why he in the end voted for the financial industry bailout, but said no to the automakers. Also in this edition of Dateline Washington, how we got into this mess in the first place. We'll talk with Howard Husick of the Manhattan Institute, who explains in detail how banks were forced by government policies in the 1970s and 1990s to extend as many loans as possible to those who weren't necessarily able to pay them back, and what lessons we ought to learn so we don't find ourselves in another credit crisis in a future generation. Plus, the Obama health care agenda. Tom Daschle, the former Senate Majority Leader, is officially named as the President-elect's nominee to head the Department of Health and Human Services. What kind of health care reform plan will the two of them try to spearhead? And what could it mean to your bottom line? And scandal comes to Illinois. We'll talk about the Rod Blagojevich corruption scandal and other stories with John Gizzi, political editor of Human Events. All that, plus Thursday's top news still ahead in this edition of Dateline Washington. We begin with our conversation with Texas Congressman Mike Conaway, and we begin right now. My first guest in this edition is Texas Congressman Mike Conaway, a Republican from the Lone Star State's 11th Congressional District. I've asked him to offer his explanation as to why he opposed the $14 billion rescue package for the auto industry on Wednesday and what he believes would be a better solution to the crisis facing the Big Three. And Congressman, thanks so much for your time.
Well, thanks, Greg. Good to be with you.
Obviously, as I mentioned, you voted no. Why did you reach that conclusion?
Well, I don't believe this will work. The couple of fatal flaws in my view. One is Karzar has incurable conflicts of interest in his position of being able to totally manage three competitors who are currently competitors and we would hope would remain competitors. He'll have to make management decisions for all three on behalf of all three of those entities, and I just don't think that conflict of interest is appropriate. So the Karzar is obviously a huge problem for me. Also, lending the money to bankrupt companies is bad policy. I mean, they are no way will they be able to pay the money back. They're not; these are unsecured loans, and I know the legislation talks about that this money, this debt goes in front of existing debt to the extent existing debt covenants allow that. Well, I can assure you, as bad a shape of these companies in, existing debt holders, existing bondholders have every asset in that company tied up. So this is unsecured debt. It's unsafe, unsound banking if you were trying to make this deal. And in my view, these companies are going to fail one of these days. And because the medicine is harsh, everybody wants to continue to put it off. But the medicine they need to do is to go through the Chapter 11 process, which is the existing law that's set up for large and small companies to be able to go into it, reorganize. In this instance, shed, in my view, the union contracts that are the millstone around the necks of these companies that they cannot swim with. And the unions are going to be unwilling to renegotiate those contracts in any meaningful way. And so the companies need to go through Chapter 11 and emerge on the other side of that, more nimble, more competitive, and in a better position for their own long-term survival.
Congressman, are you convinced that's the best way to move forward? Or would there have been something that the automakers or union chiefs would have been able to say to convince you that this would have been a good investment?
Well, the only way for the unions to have done that is to make the choice that I just don't think they're willing to make on their own, and that is that they would abandon their post-retirement benefit contracts that's the real burden for these companies, and mechanically they may not even be able to do that. So I don't see that any of the parties will be able to do that short of Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection and the advantages that gives to the company with respect to existing debt and existing contracts. So, Greg, everybody wants an easy solution. Everybody wants a painless solution, and everybody wants a quick solution. There are no easy, painless, quick solutions. The other thing is that folks aren't buying cars right now anyway, regardless of the cost. Even the non-Big Three automakers are scaling back production, closing down lines for days and weeks in the coming months because their cars aren't being bought either. So when the economy's experiencing the dislocation and the trauma that it currently has, you know, no matter what your product is, if people aren't in a position to be able to buy it, then you're in trouble no matter what. So these are hard times, particularly hard times for the automobile industry. And but short of bankruptcy and the Chapter 11 workout, I don't see any viable solution.
Now, Congressman, without getting too much into the details, many Americans have heard the terms Chapter 11, restructuring, reorganization, with many folks confident that if they end up going through there, they'll come out fine on the other side. Others say they won't. Describe the process a little bit and why you think that it'd be better for the automakers to go through this and come out better after going through it.
Well, when you go into Chapter 11, a bankruptcy trustee is appointed, a judge who will kind of referee the entire process. The company then has a certain amount of time to build a reorganization plan, a plan to come out of bankruptcy profitable on the other side. There will be creditors committees appointed for the secured debt, the unsecured debt, and so you'll have a variety of voices at the table through that these negotiations with a bankruptcy judge as the arbiter and the referee, so to speak, between these entities. It allows companies to renegotiate contracts that they would not otherwise be able to renegotiate. And sever contracts that have to be severed, renegotiate leases and all these other kinds of things that basically gives them a fresh start. You have the bankruptcy trustee watching the process. Obviously, the creditors don't want these renegotiations to affect them in particular, and they'll be at the table to try to defend their processes as well. But short of a court-supervised process like this, there's no rational, meaningful way that you can force hard things on both parties, and that's what the trustee will be in a position to do. What you've got set up with this law is a car czar who is a trustee light whose only leverage is to say either do it my way or go into bankruptcy. So why not cut that step out? If the companies can't survive on their own, let them go into Chapter 11, file the Chapter 11 filings, and get the hard process started, and it's one of those classic deals. The sooner you start, the sooner you'll be on the other side of it.
We're talking with Texas Congressman Mike Conaway, who represents the state's 11th congressional district. And Congressman, I know you've heard the argument from the other side of this debate, saying that Chapter 11 may work well for some industries, but not the auto industry, because Americans would simply abandon them while they're restructuring, and that would send them into a complete economic tailspin. What's your assessment of that line of argument?
Well, they're not buying their cars now. And I think that's overplayed. Once the company goes into Chapter 11, most of us who do a lot of flying would fly airlines who are in Chapter 11 bankruptcy and during their workout time frame, unconcerned that maintenance might have been cut during that process. So you cavalierly got on airplanes management companies were in bankruptcy. This is not a whole lot different. Obviously, the warranty issues that are out there for new cars being bought, and I just bought a brand new pickup, trying to do my part. I know that the warranty issues is big, and that so does the management of these companies. And one of the things that they will do early on is make allowances for that, to understand, to try to regain confidence in their customer base, to lay those fears aside as they work through this process. So I think it's a bit overstated, and but by the same token, there are no easy answers, and there are certainly no painless answers to getting these companies on the other side. If they can't get to the other side, then that's the right answer also. We'll just have to live with that. It's going to be hard. There will be lots of people lose their jobs. But the truth of the matter is that's what bankruptcy laws are put in place for. Far better. You've got a more stable environment as to what the rules are and are not than you do under this newly created bankruptcy light process that the House voted on yesterday. There's immense uncertainty in that arena, whereas in bankruptcy, the laws are well-established, the processes are well-established. You've got as much protection for creditors and the companies as you possibly can, and it's, in my view, a preferable way to get these companies on the other side of where they are right now, if, in fact, they can make that.
Congressman, you, of course, have been a frequent guest on this program, and I know we talked a couple of times during the debate over the financial industry bailout back in late September, early October, and you were torn on that issue, initially voted against it, and then reluctantly voted for it. Do you see any similarities between these two plans, and if so, why did you decide against this one and ultimately for the first one?
Well, the first one was systemic for the entire economy. In other words, if the banking system doesn't work, if the lending system doesn't work, that reached across every segment of the economy. This is just a big segment, a narrow segment of the economy with respect to the automobile dealers. With respect to that first half, the obviously a lot of problems with the implementation of that. If the Treasury asks for the other half of the bailout money, the $750, I would vote against it because I think the FDIC took steps that were more effective at keeping the banking system functioning the way we all wanted it to do and address the threats to the banking system that I believed were there than even the bailout money. So, we all get better with hindsight. We all get better with experience. And as I said at the time, we will have, before we have a chance to vote on the other half of that bailout money, we will gain additional insight into whether or not it worked, how it was getting implemented, and all those questions. And to date, there are a lot of questions about that and significant enough that I would vote against the second half of the money. So this is, there's the old adage that consistency is the hobgoblin of small minds, but I view these as two different issues.
About a minute left here with Congressman Mike Conaway. And Congressman, there's obviously a lot of doubt as to whether or not this package is going to pass the U.S. Senate here in the coming hours. But if it does, what do you expect to happen in the coming months? Do you expect the big three to be back for more?
Oh, absolutely. This money is just to cripple them along until maybe the end of March. That, in my view, is not a long-term plan. There are no teeth in this law that forces them to do that. Simply the ability of the bankrupt of the car czar to say, well, I don't like your plan. The unions aren't giving up enough. Management's not giving up enough. You're going to have to go into bankruptcy. At that point in time, he then tries to collect back the money we've loaned them, and there's not going to be anything to collect that money back from. So I would prefer to take the hard step now of these companies on their own deciding that they've come to their rope's end, going into bankruptcy, coming out on the other side, strong competitors in the world market, more nimble, more cost-effective, and in the long term, create greater value for America and this economy.
Congressman, unfortunately, our time is up. As always, sir, it's great to have you with us.
Good to be with you, Greg. Thank you very much.
Texas Congressman Mike Conaway represents his state's 11th congressional district. This is Dateline Washington.